you know, I'm gonna backtrack just a shade. That's an old Chinese curse, really. May you live an interesting life. Not to get too heady this time of morning.
Well, I know that you took 40 years off of jazz.
Oh, yes. I had to quit in 1965 or I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. You know the story about me waking up naked in a padded cell in the police department in Los Angeles?
I've heard about it, but I don't know the whole story, no.
Well, it is a whole story. You got to read that. I guess there was an epiphany standing there naked in a cell. This is 1967. And how I got there was like a movie. I don't watch movies like Matrix because that was kind of what got me there. But I'm living long enough now to see some of my fantasies, man, turning into realities, which is kind of weird. Anyway, standing there naked, regaining consciousness in a padded cell in the main Parker Center downtown L.A. Police building, I remember standing looking at the rust-colored walls and the sump in the middle, and I was clear-headed until this moment. Morton, this is me talking to myself. I think you're doing something wrong with your life. See, after I got out of the Army, I started playing tenor sax and doing all the show bands in Las Vegas and Reno and Hollywood and L.A., and then got into R&B and started really living the life. And that's, you know, nobody hired clarinet players. Nobody hires them today. And that's my main axe. And unfortunately, the clarinet, when Bird hit, went right down the sewer, you know, from the Artie Shaw days or anything. The connotation was that it was an old-fashioned instrument, back to the swing era. And quite frankly, it's the hardest instrument to really maintain and learn and keep your chops up. And it was too much work, man. I do play sax. I made most of my money playing sax back in the day. Never took a lesson.
The decade you took off, were you not playing music at all, or were you just kind of playing in a room
music,
all by yourself?
Not playing music at all.
No performing, no recording.
Playing.
Okay, wow.
I didn't have an instrument. I didn't have a horn. I went to work in a retail music store, one of the biggest in the country at that time, Wallace Music City, main store at Hollywood, Sunset and Vine. And then I branched out after 14 years and opened up my own music store, the Sheet Music Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. Ergo, my jazz label is SMS Jazz. I had that as a brick and mortar for 30 years and turned it into one of the biggest sole proprietorships west of the Mississippi.
There was satisfaction in that.
Yeah, there was. It was called like money. and eating regularly.
Yeah,
you know,
and not
rent.
Not to mention regular hours, too.
Well, except for the hours you paced around 3 o'clock in the morning, wondering how you're going to meet that next invoice within 30 days.
How much were you missing the music, the playing of the music?
I'm kind of a strong-minded guy. I didn't miss it really at all. I just gave up on it. I listened all the time. I mean, people were born with certain affinities, athletic, music, painting. I was music.
Okay.
But I just realized it was a dream that was not going to happen. 2001, I get junk mail from a local college in Orange County, California. They're starting a jazz band, and they're having auditions. I said, well, why not? My wife was in Italy at the time. And I dusted off a horn. I could play for about 2 minutes, and I went down, and I auditioned, and the guy was great, and he thought it was wonderful, yada, yada. And, you know, my first album was with Ron Eshay. The second one was with Joey DeFrancesco. I mean, things started really happening for me.
How long did it take you to get your chops back?
About a month.
Okay.
About a month. Yeah, I mean the chops were gone. The physical, the embouchure, where the muscles around the hold the mouthpiece, it was gone. But I was really determined.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, what did it feel like to be back playing music?
It was on a complete different scale. First of all, I didn't drink anymore. I didn't even smoke a cigarette, and I was 68 years old as opposed to being like in my 20s. Okay, this will probably sum it up. I would go out and sit in with different guys. I knew everybody in town, you know, from the old days and all that. If they'd be playing a gig, I would go sit in. So the first time I went and sat in, somebody is at the club in Hollywood. I'm up on the stand, and I hadn't really noticed the audience. I turn around, and I'm like, what are all these? It's a sea of gray. What are all these old people doing here? No, you talk about reality checks, John.
Yeah.
I can picture it right now. Because, like, you know, when I was there, it was cutting edge, young hippies, this, that, you know, the other thing. This is a whole, I'm a leisure world, I thought.
On the blues side, there's a guy who has a similar story. His name is Jody Williams. He plays guitar. As a matter of fact, he was Howlin' Wolf's first guitar player when Wolf moved to Chicago back in the 1950s. And at some point, Jody Williams just got ticked off at the music business, and he just quit. He put his guitar down and went to work, like IBM or something like that, for 37 years. And when I asked him, what was it like to pick it up again, he said, well, I just picked it up out of the bed because I was retiring from my job, and I started playing it, and he said, I just started crying like a baby. He said, I picked it up right away. So, like,
well, it's very emotional. It was an emotional thing to be on the stand and playing and have people clap and applaud for you after you play a solo.
You mentioned Joey DeFrancesco. He was your partner on the second album.
Yeah, we did two albums together, and he was with Concord Records at the time.
An album or two after that, I think it was your solo clarinet album,
Raising the Bar.
Okay, it came across my desk, and it was a Mort Weiss album, and I noticed that right away, and it had a little note attached to it, and it said something about that you were the best clarinet player in the world.
Are you talking about the Scott Yanoff music critic thing, and about the happiest thing in the 21st century was my return?
My recollection of the note was that you said you were the best clarinetist in the world.
Oh, I am the best jazz clarinetist in the world.
Well, I was going to ask you about it. Do you still stand by that? Apparently you do.
Oh, more now than ever. Nobody's ever done more. Now, best is a weird word. I mean, it's self-effacing, the whole thing. Nobody can do what I do on a clarinet because, you see, John, I'm a little nuts, but I know how to redirect that craziness into my craft, and I did that in my last album. Mentioned about the reality show, I can't believe some of the stuff. It's impossible to do certain things that I do in the clarinet.
As a non-musician, can you give me an example?
Well, technically, I run the gamut from the lowest notes through the middle of the instrument and play the highest notes and run back down again. Now, guys, I only had one idol in life. I didn't have any sports franchise in Los Angeles when I was growing up. Buddy DeFranco was my idol, and he became a friend of mine, too. And I think he was probably the greatest jazz kind of player that ever lived. If you have to put people in certain categories, Buddy was a monster. Back in the day with Benny and Artie, Benny Goodman, Artie Shaw, and people like that, and Woody Herman, they had to play high in the register because the clarinet didn't have the power that a trumpet or a saxophone had. So everything was way up in the air, way up in the higher octaves. Jimmy Giuffre took it down in the lower registers. And for one reason, and he was a great musician, not a great clarinetist, but he didn't have the chops. That's why he never went to the higher register. I like that sound, so I learned how to become, built my facility up in the lower register and through every register that no clarinet player even attacks. Well, what I'm doing now is a legacy. I just want people to know that Mort Weiss walked by here, that's all. I'm 80 years old. I'm still practicing. I lost a front tooth a couple of months ago. I'm in the middle of a tooth transplant. It's the worst possible place at all. I'm practicing on one tooth. People don't even do that. It's impossible. I do it.
Well,
like I said, I'm a little nuts.
Well, I think you're refreshing. It's not often we get someone that acknowledges they think they are one of the great players in the world.
Why do something? I've devoted my whole life, tears, laughter, everything. Man, I've paid some horrendous dues. I cannot blow smoke to myself. What is a person supposed to think? Hi, I'm Mort Weiss. I'm really not very good. Do you like me?
Have you always been opinionated, or did that happen in the 1960s or after 1967? You know,
well, from all the bloody noses that I can think back as a kid and everything, you know, being Jewish, man, I grew up in a suburb of Pittsburgh. Until I was 10, I used to get beaten up every day on the way back to the school because I killed Christ. You know, it was that kind of thing. Mm. So I was fighting from the beginning, and same with in the army when I got drafted, 1954. You know, things were different. We were marched to church services. On base, we heard the most scatological preachings about anti-Semitic preachings against the Jewish people. You know, I grew up, PC was not around yet at that time. And I just didn't take any, you know what, from anybody. And by the way, during my hiatus of the music playing, I got very involved in international yacht racing. I had major sailboats. I mean, we're talking like 30-footers. I would race to Mexico and back. I mean, I got into full contact karate martial arts. I was in many tournaments. I mean, I think back at some of the stuff that I did. It was wild.
Mort Weiss, it's wonderful getting to talk to you and get to know you a little
pleasure.
Bit.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much, John, for having me.